Raising women's voices, one story at a time. Welcome to the She Said Project Podcast. Today is an amazing day on the She Said Project podcast. I am just so grateful that we get to do this and check in on friends who've been on the She Said stage. I really want to say thank you to Illinois Public Media who have opened up their studios and their hearts to us, Carrie. From the very beginning, they've been so supportive of all things She Said. And when we said we wanted to launch a podcast, they said, yes, let's do it. So here we sit. We sit in the Illinois Public Media studios today.
They are another great example of why I love our community. When we have these big ideas, we reach out to people and say, so we've never done this before, or this show's never been done before, or we decided we want to do a podcast, and people saying, okay, how can we help? And then not only how can they help, but every time we're here, they make it so easy and fabulous and support us in so many ways.
And I don't think we ever give them enough credit, because sitting on the other side of the glass is Stephen Mark, who just has been here for every episode, our sound engineer, and Kevin McGuire, who's been editing our episodes since the beginning. Sometimes you just need to pause and say thank you, because there's never enough time.
Well, or we just need to pause because I've dropped the F-bomb and we need to tell them to edit it out
that
so
is
you
correct.
All don't hear it.
That is correct. We are just vamping because we had to edit something Carrie said at some point, yeah. I'm sure.
So it's always been great for us because I know I always wonder, I wonder what's going on with. And today's guest I have thought of so many times since hearing her piece. And I know lots of other people that she's on their minds too. So I am really excited.
Yes. When Sandra Otten said she was available to join us for this season of the She Said Project podcast, I got very, very excited. And she is here with us in person, which just makes me jump with joy, except I can't because then I would bump the microphone. But that's okay. Sandra, hi. Welcome.
I'm so glad to be here.
I can see the whites of your eyes. That makes me so happy. Man, oh man, did you share a powerful story on the stage. February 23, an amazing cast, such a fun, incredible group of women. But your story was one for the books, man. I remember that night so vividly. Do you?
Oh, my God. Yes. Well, I have to say, I impressed myself.
Yay! I'm
high-fiving yourself.
It's really true.
That's so
like,
great.
I was like, oh, my gosh. The whole experience was just phenomenal. And to have delivered it and got the response that I got from the community, and it just warmed my heart, and it just opened a lot of creativity in my life. It took a lot. It took a lot to write it. It took a lot to practice it. Every time I rehearsed it, which was daily for months, I cried. You know, every time I cried, I didn't have to fake anything there. It was an emotional ride about my story with my mom and seeing her through to her death from frontotemporal dementia, taking care of her with my dad, and finding out that we had a family gene for the dementia. It rocked our world, of course. And then I found out that I have the gene. So that was the story that they're going to hear here.
Yeah, you have set us up perfectly. Just the layers that your story had. There was the journey with your mom, but then so much more. And I mean, we can all feel what you were going through. Let's just go right to the performance from that night. Sandra Otten on stage with her story, Never Say Never.
I come from frugal people. My parents raised five kids on one blue-collar salary, and they took gardening very seriously. We had three gardens, one of them the size of a basketball court just for potatoes. I spent so many hours in that garden. And when I found out that IGA sold potatoes for 10 cents a pound, I was like, excuse me. I am never stepping foot in that potato garden again. I will buy my own potatoes. Thank you very much. Fast forward about 40 years, I am not only growing and eating my own homegrown tomatoes, kale, and of course potatoes, I'm also eating my own words. Lesson learned, never say never. My family also had frugal down-home ways toward pets. Our family dog slept in a cardboard box in the garage. Moving to this more sophisticated college town where people take their fur babies to bed with them. not me. I knew that the fur baby mentality was incompatible with my thoughts about animals. So I just resigned myself that I was never going to be a dog person. That's all right. And then late one night, I was on Facebook. My bad, I know. But there I was, couldn't sleep, and the algorithm gods popped up a cute little picture of a little terrier named Malvo. And I guess you know where it's going, right? I am now that person. For Christmas this year, I bought myself a king-size bed, so I had room for little Malvo to snuggle with me. And then I bought him some little stairs so he could get up in bed a little easier. That's who I am. But I do not call him my fur baby. Oh, no. He's my baby dog. It's true. It's true. I had my never rules about dating, too. And the big one was I was never going to date a man who was on the rebound. So I accepted a date from a man, and then he told me that his fiance had recently broken up with him. And I was like, okay, well, that's fine, but this is not a date. This isn't a date. We're just going to go out for dinner. It's fine. A week later, our first kiss, and now I've been married to Kevin for 27 years. So there you go. You'd think I'd learn, never say never, right? But I come from hard-headed people. Germans, hard-headed Germans, we want things to be black and white. We want to say never and mean it. But I have learned that you can't always say never and mean it. Life is sometimes lived in the gray, and I watched this with my mom taking care of my grandma who was dying from Alzheimer's. She wanted things to be black and white, too. We got a care plan together. We know this is how it's going to go, but as soon as you get a care plan together, something changes, it progresses, and everything changes, right? There is no black and white. There is no roadmap to follow. But my mom was clear about one thing. She told us, if I ever get like that, I want you to put a pillow over my head. That's what she said. She told me, she told my sister, she told my dad. I was like, okay, I hear you, I hear you. My elderly friend Nance, she was diagnosed with Alzheimer's, and she told me the same thing. She said she wasn't going to live with it. She was going to end her own life. I didn't know if she was serious or not. Maybe she was just being dramatic like my mom was with the pillow comment. But then one day she came to art class. She's a 70, 80-year-old woman, and she came to art class and she told me she had a new tattoo. I was like, a tattoo? Let me see. So she showed me her tattoo right above her breast. It said, do not resuscitate, right here. Yeah, where the paramedics wouldn't miss it. And then a couple of weeks later, she came to art class, and she told me, I'm going to do it soon, Sandra. And I was like, really? What? No, Nance, what are you talking about? You're fine. You're still driving. And she explained to me, you have to do it yourself. It's not something that somebody can do for you. And with dementia, you have to do it early so that you can do it. And it's exactly what she did. She, as I euphemistically say, transitioned herself. I was sad, but yet I was extremely proud of her for making her own decision. A few years later, when my mom was about 75, we began to notice some strange behavior. We were out to eat, and she was drinking out of our cups and eating off of our plates, sometimes making some comments in public that weren't appropriate. We didn't worry too much about that then, but then I knew one day when I went down to do some crafting with her, and she's a lifelong seamstress, and she couldn't put two right sides of fabric together to make a pillow. And then I knew something was going on, and we started doctoring with a neurologist, and they confirmed a dementia diagnosis. They thought it was Alzheimer's. By 2019, it had progressed, as dementia does, to the point where mom was no longer able to get out of bed by herself. So I was often down helping my dad take care of her. And I went in to help her get out of bed one morning, and she was crying. And I said, Mom, what's going on? What can I do? How can I help? And she said, I'll be fine as soon as I get my head under the pillow. Well, I just crawled in bed with her and cried. Thoughts swirling around in my head. remembering my grandma's own last sad years in the nursing home, remembering Nance and her self-transitioning, and of course, remembering my mom's own words to me, to us. And I think she was asking me to do it in the only way she knew how, but I couldn't do it. I didn't do it. The doctors finally realized that mom's dementia was not Alzheimer's, but rather it was frontotemporal dementia, which you probably never heard of before until Bruce Willis got public with it last week. His family talked about him having FTD, and the whole world found out that FTD is not just for flower delivery anymore. That's a different thing. FTD is a lot like Alzheimer's. At the end, they end up in the same place, but they start differently. With Bruce Willis's, it started with speech aphasia. That's what his family has said. He started losing words. Sometimes it starts with just bad decision-making because your front lobes are where your impulse control happens. And so you start not having the, if you feel like eating off of somebody's plate, you eat off of their plate. If you feel like not wearing a bra anymore, like my mom did, you stop wearing a bra. Not that I begrudged her that. We learned that FTD is usually random. Haven't heard that Bruce Willis's wasn't. We never heard that his family had it. But in some cases, it is genetic to the point that each offspring has a 50-50 chance of carrying the gene. It all began to add up. My grandma did not have Alzheimer's. My uncle, my mom's brother, who was in the nursing home by the time he was in his 60s, also had FTD, and then my mom got diagnosed, and we had her tested for the gene, and it turned out she had the gene. So now we knew the cold, hard facts. Each of my siblings and I each had a 50-50 chance of carrying the gene. And per the medical literature, if you carry the gene, you will inevitably get and die of FTD, unless you die of something else first. And tragically, FTD is usually what gets you because it's also got the terrible symptom of being early onset for most people. A lot of people get it in their 50s, as Bruce Willis did, because he's in his early 60s now and he's already down the road with it. So we had some decisions to make. My siblings and I each had to decide whether or not we wanted to be tested or not. Some of us decided yes, some of us no. I knew I would get tested because I'm the kind of person who faced things head on, and I wasn't too frightened about it because I'm 60 years old and I'm fine. So I thought we're probably fine. But before I got tested, I was thinking, I needed to make up my mind about one thing first. Did I want to buy long-term care insurance? Yeah. So I weighed it out. If the test was positive, would I assist in my own death early, as Nance had done? If so, I didn't need the long-term care insurance. But if I was willing to spend the last years of my life in a nursing home, then I'd like to have the long-term care insurance, and I needed to buy it before I was tested so that if I was tested positive, it wouldn't be a pre-existing condition. So it was a big decision I was facing, whether or not to buy the insurance. And I made up my mind. I decided not to buy the insurance because I made up my mind that no matter what, I was never going into the nursing home, which means I plan to follow Nance's lead in self-transition. That is if I had the gene, which I didn't know yet, but I had to make the decision. So having made the decision, I was tested, and yes, I do have the gene, right? So what now? Well, being who I am, I immediately started researching. I wanted to research three things. First, how to prevent it. What to do to hold off the dementia as long as I can. And I came up with a plan. It's called All the Things. I'm doing all the things. Yes. I changed my diet. Yes, yes, all the things. I changed my diet to a non-inflammatory diet. I do yoga. I use my CPAP for sleep. I get my cardio up every day. I do affirmations. And I do positive thinking. I take supplements. I learn to play the ukulele. I eat more blueberry and kales than is right for any one person, I swear. Maybe you have an idea about something else I should do. Maybe you have thought of something that I haven't named there, but believe me, I'm already doing it. I do all the things, all of them, all the things, exactly. Secondly, I started researching about clinical trials, and thank God, this is a very rare dementia. FTD is rare enough, but the genetic variety that I have, even rarer, but it is the dementia that is closest to having a cure. There's actually a drug in phase 3 of a clinical trial. So if you want to do something for me, pray that they get this drug developed before my family needs it. Yes. Finally, the third thing I researched was, if and when I have to do it, how would I transition myself? I researched the laws in other states and in other countries, and I put it in my last will and directive so that if I was found dead, people would know that it wasn't a rash decision, and it wasn't something that anyone influenced me about or assisted me with. It was my own decision. So I was doing all this research and dealing with all of this, and at the same time, I was taking care of my mom. And it was quarantine time, so I was there every day taking care of her. We were quarantined together, my mom and dad and I. It was both a blessing and a curse. It was a curse because it was really hard to watch the possible very sad trajectory play out in front of me of how my own life might end. But it was a blessing because taking care of my mom changed me. My love for her grew every day. It just grew deeper and deeper. She was the sweetest thing, which, by the way, is not typical of FTD by any means. It is not. But she was. And her and I developed this little routine. She was in a recliner, and I'd sit on the edge of the recliner, and I'd snuggle up to her heart to heart and look her in the eye and talk to her. And I started asking her a lot. I'd say, are you my mom? And she'd say, yeah, I'm your mom. And some days she'd say, I don't think so. One day I asked her, are you my mom? And she said, no, are you my mom? I feel like it. I feel like your mom right now. So that was during the pandemic, and then after school started that year, she moved into my house in Urbana, and I wanted to be there because I wanted to homeschool my grandson at the time. So I was wrangling him, Eli, to get his schoolwork done, and my mom, nonverbal though she is, she pipes up, you sound just like your mother. And I was like, what? She was not wrong. I did sound just like her when she was wrangling her 5 kids to get their schoolwork done at her kitchen table. So many times, just when I think that there was nobody home, she would show me that she's still in there. I remember that during her last summer, she was sitting at her patio, and I put a pen and paper in front of her, and I said, will you make a gratitude list, Mom, which was very much in keeping with who my mother was. And she wrote the word humming, reflecting the hummingbirds that she had been watching. And then she wrote the word ice cream, reflecting the treat I'd just given her. And then she wrote the single word, you. I know. Yeah, it was just like that. It was all so sweet. Not that there weren't shit shows. Both figurative and literal. And all manners of family drama and hard things to contend with. But the overwhelming thing was love. So much love. As my heart opened to her, my heart opened. I became more compassionate toward her, toward myself, toward my dad. I repaired a long-standing strained relationship with my dad. Beyond repair, it just blossomed. I got the gift of watching my sister, my husband, my son, my brothers, even my grandson, step up and care for her in a way that I did not know that we were capable of. When she slipped away in my spare bedroom that December night, it was not the depressing, tragic end that I had envisioned. So one day, I'll likely be faced with the decision, do I go with my initial decision, my carefully laid out plan A, like Nance did, and self-transition? I'm telling you right now, I will not say never. And I will fight for the right of everyone to make their own end-of-life decisions. But I'm also thinking about how my heart grew and how much I grew spiritually stronger because of my time all the way to the end with my mom. Maybe I'll decide that I believe in and can trust in the care and compassion and love of my family and my friends and my community, of you and you and you. Maybe I'll decide that I too can be spoon-fed and diapered and wiped without losing my dignity, but just as a normal part of the human experience. I thought I was sure, but today, I don't know. I'm living in the gray because life has shown me never say never.
Okay, so in preparing for today's podcast, we go back and refresh. We look at the last line of the story and get ourselves in the mindset. But the whole way you ended that with never say never. And now, I don't know about Carrie, but has anything changed since that moment that you've had to reconsider?
Well, a lot has changed in that one of my siblings has started developing the dementia. So
I'm so sorry, my friend.
It's really devastating. And it really brings it home in a way that like, oh, it's not a theory anymore, right? But let me just tell you, there is so much good news on the FTD front. As I said, this is a very specific gene for a very specific kind of FTD. Very few people have the gene. Very few people get diagnosed in time to do anything about it. But in fact, there is a trial for gene replacement therapy that is working. Yeah, I'm on a support group for folks who have the gene and our family members of people who have the gene. And one of my friends from that support group's husband is in the trial. He had his gene replaced and his body is making progranulin, what our bodies don't make when we have this gene. And so my sibling is getting in the trial. Yes. He's just back from Philadelphia and that's happening. And I was in Philadelphia just 2 weeks ago, which is where the FTD clinic is. The main clinic in the country is in Philadelphia. And I still have the all clear. They're like, nope, you can't be in any trial, Sandra. You don't have any symptoms, you know. So yes, yay.
Yay, no, big yay.
Yes.
Cheering over here.
Exactly, exactly. So, you know, it's devastating and it's very exciting at the same time because they're thinking that the gene is working. So I tried to get in a trial way back. And it was a trial where they were going to infuse progranulin into our body. And this is different. This is the gene goes into the body. It gets injected into the base of the brain and the gene starts working. It's a healthy gene. So yeah.
I remember working on the story with you and you did share that this is one of the forms of dementia that has some more positive outcomes and there were some trials at the time and there was hope, there was possibility. But what you did for our community here is you shined a light on this topic that not many people know about and you shared your story and your vulnerability, which is huge, and we respect you so much for that. But thank you for these updates because it's scary stuff.
It
what
is.
You've mm-hmm. had to face, and I'm just so happy to hear that there's progress.
Right, because even though it's progress and it's wonderful, but it's for such a small number of people, but they do believe that this is on the cutting edge and it will lead to other forms of dementia being able to be cured.
Well, it is so specific, but it was so many different things because it was informative and you were raising awareness, but because you made it so personal, I feel like you delivered it so well to everyone to be able to hear it and absorb it. And I went down the rabbit hole that night and started looking up what you had specifically talked about, and then which led to researching all kinds of things. And then I asked my girls for their feedback that night, and both of them said that they were so touched by your story. And I thought, boy, to have, you know, teenagers that mm-hmm. were giving thought to that, that's pretty huge that your
story. I got two things I want to keep on the table too, or put on the table. And one is, I really do encourage people to get cognitively tested early. Lots of people are like, oh, I forget my keys, I lost my phone, I da-da-da-da-da. It's really nice to have a baseline. I had one from 2019. So now I have, every 2 years, I go and get cognitively tested to make sure, you know, that I'm staying with it. There's a lot of dementia that's hard to diagnose, FTD being one of it, because it can be a personality change. It can be, and it's not always a bad personality change. Sometimes people who are really gripey get really carefree, you know, and that's their first symptom. Or they just lose control of their impulses, like they start, you know, drinking more. And so then it looks like alcoholism. So there's a lot of ways that dementia can be misdiagnosed. So I really do encourage people to get a baseline neurological test really early, especially if you have dementia in the family, especially if you have early dementia in the family, because early dementia is often genetic.
And then if you do find that there's something concerning, what are all the things that you might recommend?
That was the second thing I was going to put on the table. Like, take care of your brain, people. Like, really, I'm not against people who need to have antidepressants or anti-anxiety. But if you don't really need them, find another way to treat your brain without adjusting by chemicals, because you just don't know what the long-term effects of things are. So that's one thing that I just put out there. Like, have you tried deep breathing? Have you tried cognitive behavior therapy? Have you tried, you know, try some things before you go straight to medication for your brain? Because your brain is a delicate organ. It's not like the heart. We know exactly how it works. We know how the heart works. We know how the liver works. The brain, it's new stuff all the time with figuring it out, you know. And all the things that you can do for your body, your brain is part of your body. Anything you can do for your body is good for your brain. So, you know, have a heart healthy diet, get exercise, have a great social life, you know, make sure that you reach out to people, that you have interactions with people. My neurologist did tell me early on, don't quit your job, Sandra. It's like, well, I want to quit my job.
I was open for
that. I thought you should tell me to quit my job.
Clearly, I need some rest and relaxation, right?
Right. So I had to compromise on that one because I'm semi-retired, but just really semi. I have made sure that what I fill my days with is not watching mindless TV, although I have my binges that I do. You know, it's not what I usually do. I would recommend, I'll just throw out that there's an app called Brain HQ designed by neurologist, and it is the one that's most recommended. So if you want to play games for your brain, Brain HQ is a good app to use.
We're going
to
ask for endorsements. Yes, we're going to reach out. No, I'm just kidding. Yes. But no. These are amazing recommendations. Do you still recommend the kale and the blueberries and the gardening and all the things?
Well, my son told me today that my daughter-in-law said, I don't think I know anybody who likes kale as much as your mom. I think she's faking it. Like, well, I can grow kale like nobody's business. And it's not, you don't have to love it. You just have to eat it. You know, you have to tolerate it. And I don't dislike kale. It's just kale. You know, it's just like, well, I can put it in my salad. I can put it in my stir fry, whatever.
I think of you every time I enjoy a bowl of kale, I'm telling you.
I love kale. Yes.
Sandra, in addition to everything that you've shared and this wonderful insight, because obviously you've done a lot of research, I just want to give you a shout out and some credit, because you are, as Carrie was saying, people who show up in this community and say, how can I help? Sandra and her husband are just incredible examples of showing up, supporting this community. You have built a wellness center. You have researched and brought to our community different alternative healthcare techniques. You are really putting the word out there about empowering people to take their health into their own hands. I'm just so proud to know you and watch all that you're building. You work from a place of kindness and love. It's infectious. And
oh,
I just want
thank
you to
you.
Know that.
Thank you.
That we see you. We
thank
see
you.
What you're doing out there.
Thank you. I will also say that you encouraged me so much with helping me really develop that story. I learned so much about the process of really sticking with something until it was polished. You know, so many times we just like, oh, it's good enough. You know, oh, I'm turning this in. This is good enough. I just was like, okay, now this, now that, now that. And let me just tell you, I'm working on a one-woman show.
Yes. Yes. We had talked about the possibility.
I know. We did. And I'm working on it. I'm going to talk to you about it more. I was actually contacted because of That's What She Said by someone at the Station Theater. Like, are you thinking about doing something? And da 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 da. So she planted the seed a little bit deeper. Yeah, I'm working on it. I've hired a coach. I have a writing group. It's going to be a multimedia thing. I've got, I'm working on some songs. I'm songwriting.
Yes.
Because
as ukulele.
Yes, me and my ukulele. Mm. Yes. Yeah. So I finished one song. I've got the second one in the works.
Do you see her face, Carrie? Do you see the light coming from
yes,
her right now?
I'm just mesmerized. You do it all. You're just so multifaceted. You know,
I have a lot of energy. And I really appreciate that about myself, is that I feel like it's a gift too. You know, not everybody has the energy I have. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I gardened 2 days in a row, and then I went hiking on Mother's Day. I have a lot of energy, and my legs are tired. But I do tend to do things because I have a lot of energy, so.
It's all that kale you eat, obviously. I went to the gym yesterday, and my thighs are killing me right now. Seriously.
More kale.
Obviously.
More blueberries.
Okay, so I'm a firm believer that every woman has a story. Every woman should write a memoir, and every woman should write a one-woman show. Talk about like just purity of expression. There is nothing like that interaction with sharing your story in front of people. That's What She Said is definitely an experience to feel what that feels like, but you are taking it to the max, and I love that for you.
Yeah, there's a lot of backstory, of course, that you can't tell in 10 minutes. You know, I'm a recovering addict. I have a family member who was in prison. I've been through the ringer, and yet I don't feel at all like I've had hardships, because everybody has hardships. There is a universal story with dealing with life, right? And trying to find out what are the secrets. And I feel like I have some secrets. I feel like I do. I have some things to share. I've used my challenges in life to make such a wonderful life. I just feel like I should share it, and I want to share it.
Yeah, you have lots of material to dig through, for sure. And you're right. You can't tell it all in a, she said, 10-minute story. And we always say, save it for the podcast. We'll chat some more on the podcast. And you've given us so much more wonderful backstory and material to think on. But I am just on pins and needles thinking how exciting it would be to see you share more of your life lessons.
It'll be fun.
In a theatrical setting.
We'll be there front and center cheering wildly.
100%. Absolutely. And yeah. All your She Said sisters will be right there cheering you on. So that's a work in progress. We're semi-retired. Any other amazing last parting words for us?
I love Champaign Urbana. Sometimes people are like, I'm just so bored. I always say, I haven't been bored since 1999. So if you are bored, follow somebody, do something, change it. Like, there is no reason to be bored in this community, in this life, right? So get off the couch. Let's do this thing.
I love this woman. Seriously.
I'm just
that's the
follow
best
her
advice.
Around
that's the best advice.
Down. Yeah.
Everyone, follow Sandra Otten on social media. She's amazing and inspiring.
Get ready for the one-woman show.
Yes. I'm ready. I'm ready to be ready. Do you have a name for it yet?
I don't. I'm writing, you know.
It will reveal itself in due time. That is very true. Mm-hmm. All right, Carrie, we'll get our tickets. I'll meet you there.
I'm in.
I'm so excited. I love what you said. Don't be bored. There is so much to do and see and read and learn and explore in this world. I am just on fire right now. You've got me all jazzed up.
Yay.
I miss you. I miss spending time with you.
We have matching energy, for
I know,
sure.
I know. I see. Oh, I see a lot of...
Yes.
Was the other thing. I haven't slept in 12 years, so...
There you go.
My daughter's turning 12 this summer, so... Whew. We can do it all. We just can't all do it at the exact same moment.
That's right.
Yep.
But I mean, that's what we do here. That's what she said. We empower women to be their best, to do all the things, to share stories.
It was really powerful for me. Thank you for the opportunity.
Oh, and thank you for joining us here today. It is a pure joy that we get to check in with women like Sandra Otten from That's What She Said shows. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for listening to the She Said Project podcast in partnership with Illinois Public Media. All materials contained in the podcast are the exclusive property of the She Said Project and That's What She Said LLC. For more information on our live shows, go to shesaidproject.com. This podcast was made possible with support from Carl and Health Alliance and presented by Sterling Wealth Management, empowering women to live their best lives.